All right, good morning, everyone. It's 8:30 a.m., so I'm guessing you're all here because you absolutely love Universal Projects, and I know I do. So my name is Krupa. I'm a program manager on Visual Studio, and today you're going to learn all about Universal Projects, how to build apps using them, how to share content using them, and just what they are and how they all work. So first of all, a little bit about me. I work on Blend and Visual Studio, which are the two tools that I'll be spending a lot of time in. And more importantly, I've also spent a lot of time for the last, about 6 months, working actually on the Universal Project support, mainly in the Windows Phone area for WinJS, which you saw at Build just a little over a month ago. And so we're going to see a lot of HTML, a lot of CSS, a lot of JavaScript, and a little bit of Blend and Visual Studio thrown in there as well. So the agenda is very light, but it's pretty demo heavy. And I'm going to start off very easily by just casually talking about what Universal Projects are. And then I'm going to just dive into app building. I'm going to build an app from scratch where you get to see how an app is built that targets both store and phone. And then I'm going to go the opposite way and say you have a store project and you want to make it a universal one. How do you do that? And then we wrap up with some conclusion and some Q&A. So some ground rules. I'll just keep these very informal. So if you have any questions, just ask me whenever you want. We're a pretty small crowd, so I think that's totally manageable. But we do have a dedicated Q&A session at the end as well. And I'm also going to be asking a series of questions, really, just to entertain everyone, but also more importantly, to actually just help me gauge how deep and wide some of these topics I need to cover. So first of all, quick question, have you used Blend before? All right, about half of you, fantastic. And this one, Visual Studio? All right, good. That's pretty much what I expected to see, so that's fantastic. So if there are no more questions, I'll just go ahead and get started by looking at what are universal projects. So as you know, back in the day, there was a time when you had two kinds of projects. You had a Windows Store project and you had a Windows Phone project, and they had a gray line between them that prevented anything from being shared. You couldn't share content, you couldn't share assets, you couldn't share most of all your code, which meant that you had duplicated material all over the place. But as you saw from Build just over a month ago, one of the things the Windows team has been spending a lot of time doing is trying to unify the programming model. So before, if you wanted to share content, you really had no easy way. If you built an application in HTML using WinJS, you had no way at all. It wasn't until Build where we announced support for WinJS in Windows Phone 8.1, which also coincided with our ability to have universal projects where you can share content between your store and the phone. And so what universal projects are, it's pretty simple. You have one set of content that gets deployed to both the desktop and the store. And there's a lot of little things you do to make that easier, and I'm going to talk about that as well. But at the very base of this whole thing is the universal project structure. You create a project, you have basically three main components. You have a Windows 8.1 project, which is where your Windows 8.1 content will live. You have a Windows Phone 8.1 project, which is where, as expected, the Windows Phone content will live. Then you have a shared project. This is where all of the content that you want to use across both your store and your phone can be found. And that's where, as you'll find out, we'll be spending a lot of our time in, because if you're building an app from scratch, it's pretty advantageous to just think about sharing as much content as possible. So to help with this, I have a small demo app I'm going to be building. This is a screenshot. Let me end the slideshow. It's called Climb Slug, play on the name, of the weather bug name. So let me bring it up on the screen here. So does anyone want to shout out some places they want to see? Like enter city, provide I can spell it. Anybody shout out some names? Atlanta. All right. Atlanta. And let's go ahead and hit search. All right, it is 68 degrees and misty in Atlanta. So the app clearly works. One more just to make sure that, it's not pre-recorded. I didn't pay the gentleman over there to say that. Cancun. All right, let's see if MX is actually recognized. 68 and partly cloudy. All right. So one minor thing. Great. So now let's go ahead and build this application. So what I'm going to do is first close my project. And what you're going to see is this application getting built. So I'm in Visual Studio, and I'm going to go to File, New Project. And the New Project dialog you know, it's very similar to what you've seen in the past. And because I'm creating a Win.js project, I'm going to go to JavaScript, store apps. And there's a new node now called Universal Apps. And this is basically where you can now create the apps that once were just Windows or phone exclusive. You can now create apps that are basically a combination of Windows, the phone, I mean desktop, Windows phone, and the shared project. So I'm going to create a blank app. Let me just call this one, you know, Climb Slug Live, because this is the real thing. I'm going to hit OK. And once I've created that, what you'll see is a version of the project that's very similar to the screenshot I showed you earlier. You have your solution, you have a shared app folder, and then you have your three major projects. You have your Windows project, store project, and phone project. So I just create a project, and you can see the startup project by default is Windows Desktop. And just for kicks, I'm going to hit play, and you'll see that at this point, the content from my Windows Store app goes live. And if I want to preview what my Windows Phone app looks like, I can go ahead and set that as the startup project. And once you do that, notice that the dropdown here populates to all the Windows Phone specific settings. So you will not be seeing the desktop, you know, simulator, for example. And you can preview on a device or a variety of emulators. I'm going to keep it into this one because I already have it open. And if you've built a Windows Phone app, you know that the first time an emulator launches, takes a fair amount of time. I'm going to go ahead and hit play. And again, you should not see anything different here. You'll see content goes here. Everything is just fine. So that's the basic project structure. But what I want to do next, though, is start talking about, I have all this content. I want to go ahead and start creating it in a way where I can share most of the material. The general guidance is, you know, it's very much dependent on the kind of app you're building. But for the most part, your JavaScript, that should be something you can share mostly, you know, in its entirety between your desktop and store. And I'm going to go one step further. I'm actually going to create an images folder, and I'm going to put a lot of images here that I'm going to have shared between both my store and phone project. And CSS, let's see, default.css. I'm going to copy and paste my default.css into the shared project as well. I'm going to cut the CSS folder from the Windows 8.1 location, paste it into shared, and I'm going to delete default.css from my phone version. I will add one as needed depending on what I'm creating. So what I've just done is create a lot of folders, move a lot of files around. But the end result, though, is really nothing different, because the way you should think about the shared folder is not that it's an exclusive project, it's not its own separate entity. The contents of shared simply get merged into whichever platform you're currently building for or previewing. So imagine that all the content you see here, since I have Windows Phone as my default project, just gets copied and merged into this project as part of hitting F5. And are there any name collisions, the file in the platform-specific project ends up winning. And it's a subtle detail, and you'll see more of it as I demo it, but that's one of the first questions people always wonder is that, you know, how do these contents end up getting represented in the final application? It's a simple merge. It's a copy and then, you know, then just resolving names. All right, great. So now I just created my project structure, you know, made some minor changes. I'm just go ahead and start designing and making some changes to this application. So to help with this, I'm going to go ahead and open this exact same solution in Blend. The universal support that we added exists, you know, both in Visual Studio and in Blend, so it depends on which project you're going to be using to do all of your designing. All right, so I have my project, exact same one, open in Blend, and I have default.html open from the phone. And so one of the things I generally like to do is, because I have default.html open and I'm sharing a lot of content, it's very easy sometimes to accidentally make changes that causes one project to get some changes that are local to only that and then go out of sync. So I'm going to open default.html from the Windows Store version as well, just so I have two versions of the project that I can look at. So next up is I have default.html for Store, and I have another default.html for the phone. And the reason behind that is Win.js apps follow the single-page application model. And right now, there's some minor differences between what you're referencing on the store. For example, default.html for the store has references to Win.js 2.0, and then the references for the Windows Phone default.html have references to Win.js 2.1, and there's some other subtle changes as well, which means that we still need to have two different entry points to your application, but as you'll see shortly, you do have the ability to have content that can be shared between them. but we'll get there in a second. So I have default HTML, and let's just start making some very simple changes. So what I'm going to do first is just give this whole content some background color. I'm going to delete content goes here because we don't really need it. And let's give it a background. Let's start with something simple. And right now, all of our styles live in default.css. As you saw earlier, I moved default.css from all of my projects into shared. And you can see in the tooltip that it is coming from the shared location. And notice in the markup, though, because like I mentioned, it says merge, you're still referencing it as if it were to be living in your project locally. All right, so let's give it a background color. And what you see here in Blend is you have the artboard, which is where a bulk of your application can be seen. And it's a live preview of your application. It's not a rendering. So what you're seeing is actually the actual HTML, CSS, and JavaScript running in real time. And then you have the CSS properties panel, which is where you have a categorized listing of all the CSS properties you want to set. And more importantly, also have the applied style rules list, which is a visualization of the cascade. You know, in CSS, you have many styles, many content that just basically merges in together. And oftentimes, being able to peel those apart is a pretty important step. So we give you a visualization of it right here. So I'm going to go ahead and select body default.css, which is the body style rule in my default.css file. Let's go to background, and let's go and give it a background color. Let's just make it, like a slight blue. And you see it's now blue. Now, if I were to switch over to Windows Phone, you'll see pretty much the exact same thing. And the reason is that, like I mentioned, this is a shared CSS file. It's shared between default HTML for the store and the phone, and they're both referencing it. So it's the exact same content. Great. So that is at least one indication that the first step of our sharing, where these are CSS, that is working. So now let's go a little bit more in depth on what's going on. I'm going to add some images to my project. I can do it in Blend, but I'm going to do it in Visual Studio instead. I have an images folder, and let me go ahead and find it. And these are images that you will see used as part of the assets in my talk. And the images have been added. And yes, reload. So what I'm going to do now is specify a background image that goes when you first load the page. And I'm going to start with the store first. I have the body element selected. And just like before, where we specified a background color, I'm just going to specify a background image. And the one I'm going to use is landscape 01 input B, background, because I'm in landscape mode. Great. And now I'm going to go to phone. You'll see the exact same image appearing as well. Now, here's one interesting problem. The default layout for the phone is portrait, and the default one for the store is landscape. And one of the things you can do is you can see it when you're switching the application. But I'm going to introduce you to something called the device panel very early on. The device panel basically gives you the ability to preview your application across multiple device states, multiple resolutions, multiple orientations, and various other things that are specific to the OS. I'm in a Windows Store app, so I can see that I'm running at 1366 by 768, and I can just see what it looks like in portrait mode. And when I do that, you'll see that there's some weird tiling going on that is not quite all that good. And if I go into the phone mode, I see something very similar as well. The image isn't really optimized for portrait, partly because the background is actually a landscape variant of it. So how many of you here are familiar with media queries? All right, one person. All right, I'll explain a little bit more about that. So just like in code, you have conditional statements. You have if statements that say, if something's happening, do something else. What you have in CSS is the equivalent of it, called media queries. And what media queries do is, right now I have a style rule, and it's just applying arbitrarily to any element that matches a tag body. Now, imagine that I have some conditions I can specify for it. I can say, when I'm in portrait mode, have this particular style rule become active. And when I'm in landscape mode, have another style rule become active. And what this allows me to do is specify some different images for portrait and landscape so that I'm actually optimizing for the orientation the app is being viewed in. So I'm going to be in the style rules panel. And let me go ahead and right-click, add rule, add media. And what we do is we give you a predefined list of all the common media queries that you may want to use as part of building your application. Luckily, the first two are the ones that we care the most about, portrait orientation and portrait landscape. So I'm going to go ahead and add both of them to my project. So I just added the portrait one. So I'm going to go and add a landscape one as well. And so right now, I have my media query selected. I'm just going to go into CSS directly. I'm going to say background image. Sorry, that is the landscape one. I'm going to paste it in here. You can do all your modifications, provided you do it correctly, either using the visual editor, or you can do it entirely in markup. It is whatever you're most comfortable with. And I'm going to go ahead and do the same equivalent thing for the portrait. And I'm going to change this to portrait 01, input BG. And the background color is going to be common across both of them, which is fine. So once I've done that, you'll see that when I have the body element selected, you can see in your style rules panel, you have the little body, you have in your applied style rules list, you have the add selector saying, in this case, the landscape one is what is active. And in the phone one, you can see the portrait one is what is now active. And clearly, as you can see, there's some weirdness going on here. Let me set this size to contain. Beautiful. Now you have a version that is optimized for portrait. If I just swap it to landscape, you see the landscape equivalent, which I'm going to do the exact same thing to. Set this size to basically, you know, scale everything in appropriately so you can see what's going on. And this applies, again, to both store and phone. So a very simple way of seeing how you can make some, you know, using media queries, you know, have a shared set of CSS that still works reasonably well for both platforms that you're targeting, or just a single platform, because portrait and landscape is not exclusive to phone and store. So are there any questions before I move on to the next part? All right. That's actually a water break for me, so the questioning was just really a pause while I was getting that done. Great. So we just, you know, added some CSS and got the, you know, just the basics of our application going. I mean, it already looks a lot better than what it did before. You know, before it's just basically gray with content goes here. Now it has some content. So I think, you know, we're making good progress. So now the next part really is, you know, speaking of content, is the files you actually see in your project right now. So I said we have default HTML, which is really the shared content, which is really the platform-specific content, which is the entry point, the framework that, you know, the frame that really contains the root of your single page application. Let's go ahead and load a page into it. And I'm going to add a new HTML page, and I'm going to add it into the shared location. And I showed you adding a file in Visual Studio. I'll show you adding it in Blend. Right click, add new item, and let's pick HTML page. And I'll call this one homepage.html. And what this page is going to contain is the basics of the, you know, all the material that I want to show when the page loads initially. And it's going to be common across both phone and store. And for this, I'm going to enter some JavaScript because I have some. I need to basically have some code that loads the content of homepage.html into default. So let me switch back into Visual Studio. Yes, reload. Let me open my notes, which I accidentally closed. I'm going to be writing some code, but I'm going to be copying and pasting a good chunk of it. But just in order to not make it look like I'm just copying and pasting large amounts, I will step back and explain the code that I am pasting, just so you have an idea of what exactly this application is doing. So I'm pasting some code here, which, let's try again. And now I'm pasting some code here. And all I'm doing here is I'm declaring three variables. You know, please don't use the API key. I will disable it after the talk, but, you know, for now you can totally do some crazy stuff with the weather API if you guys really feel like it. And I have a function called loadInitialPage. And what this function does is pretty simple. It gets a hook into our body element, which is the root of our document right now in default HTML. And all I'm saying is I'm calling the WinJS UI Fragments API to basically load homepage.html, which is the page I just created, into the body element. I have some code, and I have a completed handler, which gets called once the page is loaded. And we will deal with that part later. And I have it commented out for now because we don't want to deal with it right now. And all I'm going to do next is just go ahead and write some code to load the content get the load initial page function actually called. So I'm going to type in document.addEventListener. And notice that, you know, we provide great IntelliSense for all the JavaScript you're writing. So it's, you know, very convenient to use Visual Studio. And Blend does not do that. So I generally like to tell people to, if you're doing CSS or HTML modifications, use Blend. But for anything JavaScript related, stick to Visual Studio. You get IntelliSense, you get really nice, you know, code formatting capabilities, And you also get debugging support, which I will touch upon briefly later. All right, I've written the code. When a DOM content loaded event fires, which is fired when a page has, at least a DOM of the page has loaded, call load initial page. Great. So now, you know, one thing I mentioned earlier is that what you're seeing in Blend is not just the rendering of your app. It's not like a WinForms designer or an ASP.NET designer you might have had many years ago. It's actually a live version of the app as it is running at design time. So that means all of your JavaScript events, they also get fired. So I'm going to hit refresh. And once I do that, pay attention to the live DOM right here. Now body has a child element called, which is the div. And when I select it, you will now see that the selected content is part of homepage.html. Basically, the content that I specified in its standalone format right here has now made itself available into this location. And being able to edit this document in place is actually very important because, you know, as you saw right now, homepage.html really is just a plain page. There's nothing really going on. And the reason is that the expectation is that this content inherits a lot of its look, a lot of its functionality, and a lot of its context from the parent frame, which is default HTML. So the WinJS APIs, the CSS, it's all inherited. So by itself, it's pretty plain. But in the context of this page, you now see it in the white background. You see some of the content and styling that matches what you're trying to do. All right. So I'm going to just clear out the content goes here part. And what I'm going to do is touch briefly on just laying out a page to have it look proper or appropriate across multiple resolutions. I'm going to do something several times that, you know, will become pretty repetitive. I'm going to give an element an ID. It can be class or ID based, but for this case, I'm going to keep it ID based. I'm going to call this one just home container. And the reason I'm ID an element is partially to be able to reference it in code, but primarily so I can actually style it, you know, have a style rule that targets this particular element. And we have some shortcuts to make that easier. So I'm going to right-click on it and say, create style rule from element ID. And the goal of me doing this is I want to create a page that kind of looks, let me try to get back to the app I just showed you guys, is I want to get a page that looks a little bit kind of like this. You have a search box, and then you have just something very simple that you can, you know, you have the location written as a placeholder. I want to create this particular look right now. So I have home container. It is currently blank. And as you can see right there, it also has no size. You know, by default, many of these elements in HTML, they take the size of the content inside them. There's no content. They have no size. Let's fix that. So I'm going to give it a height value. Let's give it a height value of 100%. And you can immediately see that you now have something that shows up with that takes up all the space available. And now I'm going to just start breaking it up and laying out content in a way that makes the most sense. So how many of you here are XAML experts or have used XAML or are familiar with XAML? All right, a good number of you. So many of you know that layout in XAML is quite good. You know, you have multiple ways of arranging content, multiple ways of positioning things in a way that is, you know, really well supported by the platform. You know, and HTML, you know, the stories have always been that laying content out in HTML is just painful. It's almost impossible, and no one ever quite knows why it works when it does end up working. Fortunately, you know, we've solved some of these problems. One of the things that we've done, both from Windows Phone 8 onwards, is that we support a new layout mechanism called Grid. And if you're familiar with Grid in XAML, you'll be familiar with this, you know, in our new world in HTML. And so what I'm going to do is I have this home container, and I want to declare it as something that supports the grid-based layout, not the normal float-based layout, but the grid-based one. So I'm going to set the display property to MSGrid. Once I've done that, you won't really see too many things that seem different. But what you do gain, though, is the ability to use grid, set grid rows and grid columns. And as anyone who's had to lay out content in HTML will tell you, being able to do this is probably one of the greatest, you know, enhancements to the language that, you know, at least I personally find, you know, quite good. And hopefully many of you might find it useful as well. So I want to create this layout. And so it's going to be one row here and then a couple of columns just to center the content. So I'm just going to eyeball it to some arbitrary sizes, and we'll make it more precise as we are testing things along. So I'm going to specify a grid row here, another grid row in this area, and let's also just, you know, box it in a little bit. And let me add one more just for the search box. All right, so I just very quickly defined the grid rows and grid columns for my content. And now comes the, you know, the fun and easy part, which is really just adding some controls. You can add controls, like I said before, in markup, or you can use the assets panel, which is similar to the Visual Studio Toolbox, where you have a collection of all the things you can add to your project, both Win.js controls, as well as all the in the HTML elements that, you know, that make up what you would often see in a typical Win.js application. So the text field is the first thing. It's an input element. I'm going to search for input. I'm just going to go ahead and enter, double-click it, and insert it here. Right now, by default, it is ridiculously large. Let's go ahead and fix that. I'm going to call this one search field. And I'm just going to position it in this location right here. So I'm going to write, just like before, I gave it an ID. I'm going to create a style rule for it. And now I'm just going to position it into this part right here. And the only skill you need to know for that is to basically count. So I'm in a grid. You know, the parent container is a grid container. So I'm just going to specify the column and row it needs to belong in, kind of like X and Y coordinates you would specify in many other, you know, cases. So I'm in column 2. So let's put column 2. And notice that as I'm making changes in real time, you get to see your content update. And I'm going to say grid row also to be 2. And let's go ahead and just center it and make it much larger. And actually, let's make the width of it 100%. I think that's probably a better end result than what you're seeing currently. And I'm searching and setting values to get this content up. So, you know, a little bit larger, but we'll fix that shortly. And next up is the search button. I'm going to go ahead and insert the search image. And just like before, when I insert this image, it's going to be ridiculously large. But let's go and fix that. Search button, create element from ID. Style rule from element ID. And just like before, I'm going to just specify its grid position to be in grid column. In this case, the third column. And the grid row is going to be column number 2. And let's actually give it a height value as well, because I don't want it to be quite that big. Height value of 35 pixels. And it is currently skewed, but we'll fix that. That is because that I need to give it an actual alignment. Perfect. All right. So, you know, the app is slowly getting there. You have a search field. You have a search button. Let's give it a background color so that's actually visible in more scenarios. And let's give it a padding value as well. And I'm going to give it a padding value of, let's say, 10 pixels. And have your padding value also. Great. So, you know, one thing I mentioned is that the sizes are pretty imprecise. Let me just go ahead and make these sizes a little bit larger. By default, all the grid sizes in HTML when you create them are in what are known as fractional units. They're a relative unit size that is not specific, but it's a ratio between, you know, all the various items you have here. So this is like 316, this is 88, and it's 363. Clearly not the, you know, we could probably simplify it further if we needed to, but because we're using some slightly weird numbers, they are, you know, what they are. But I'm going to replace this with pixels. I'm going to say 50 pixels. So set the height to something that's a little bit more reasonable and more in line with the content you see here. And this looks pretty good. You know, everything seems fine here. But one thing to notice, though, is that I've been spending a lot of time in the Windows Store portion of it. And because everything is shared, you know, one thing I like to do always is to let me just see how the phone looks. You know, we haven't paid attention to our dear friend, the phone. If I go to the phone, okay, you don't even see it here. Oh, you don't see it here because, as you remember, I added some code to call the DOM kind of loaded event, but I haven't actually refreshed the page. Let me just go ahead and do that. Reload. All right. So, wow, this is beautiful. You know, you can see it right here, and I'm kidding, by the way. That is not what we want. So let's go and fix this up as well. So I'm currently in this area, and let's see what's going on here. So clearly the search box isn't really getting a whole lot of attention, and the search button is also kind of cropped. Let's fix the first problem. Let me go ahead and set the size of the search box area to about 10 pixels. So that way we're guaranteed some space. And let's make this auto. I want this to be the size of the button at all times. And for the store, you know, any size is fine. But for the phone, it might be nice to actually center it to a certain extent. So make it 300 pixels. Great. So now you can see it looking pretty good on the phone. Let me switch back to the store. And it still looks fine in the store as well. You know, this is exactly how I would have preferred it look. So great. So I was able to quickly see how this all works. And that's one thing you'll find yourself doing quite a bit. You know, you will always find yourself as you're making changes, especially with universal apps where a lot of content is actually shared. You want to make sure that what you're doing, because your goal is to share content, that you're doing it in a way that makes it look and work appropriately, on both the store and the phone. And you want to do it frequently enough, because if I went too far in designing my app and laying content out, you might find yourself where the changes you need to make now are just too bizarre. You want to catch these issues earlier rather than later. All right, great. So I have this page. I have my search box. All that's really left is to, now when I hit the search button, to go to a page that displays some results. And for this, I'm going to short-circuit some of the work that I just did right here, because you already saw a lot of the functionality for laying content out, so there's no point in me showing it, repeating the exact same steps again. So I'm going to add some code first, and then we'll just add some markup to make it all work fine. I'm going to copy this content. It's called handle loaded page, and let's talk about it in a second. And let me uncomment the code from here, which is really the completed handler for when homepage loads. So the code I copied and pasted is handle loaded page, and the function for it basically defines, I have an image, it's called search button, as you saw earlier. The search button is called, it has an ID of search button, and just add an event listener click, and when the click is fired, just load the results page. And the results page just sets up some values, and it says load the results.html content into the target, which is really the body element from before. So I'm going to go ahead and just add the results.html, and I'm going to add this in Visual Studio this time. Add new item, HTML page, results.html. Great. And just like before, I can see it's working. I'm going to go into Blend. It noticed that I added a new file, and you added a new project. And I'm going to go ahead and, when it loads, it's taking a second, and just hit refresh. So one of the things that I know, here's another cool feature I'm going to show off right now, is, so I added some code. I added some code that is only fired and only made active when this button is clicked. Like, load results page doesn't actually happen until I actually click on this page. Now, when you're traditionally designing an application, you've been a case where, I'm loading results.html, let me open it up and start making modifications to it. Because we are in a single-page application model, just like homepage.html, the contents of results.html are really dependent on the parent container, which is what you see in default. And one of the features that we had added that makes it extremely easy for you to design in a world like this is something known as interactive mode. So you're running your application as you're designing it. Now imagine you need to navigate to a state that is only exposed from you interacting with your application, not just opening up a file. So I'm in interactive mode, which is the Blend design surface disappearing and giving the ability to interact with your application as you would when you hit F5. So I'm just going to hit go. And once I do that, notice that you see content goes here appearing. And I'm going to exit interactive mode. And once I've done that, you'll see the result, the content I'm selecting right here, is from results.html. And all the code that I ran, any variables that might have been set, all of that has been updated to reflect the current state of my application. So I'm actually designing now in a world where results.html can only be loaded from having interacted with it, and same with the phone as well. Great. So I have results.html. I'm going to call this one my results container. And I'm just going to copy and paste some markup and elements. Basically, what I want to do is get to a state where I can define some content that is relevant to results.html. Anybody want to shout out some other cities? We've had Atlanta, and we've had, I believe, Cancun. Anybody else?
Boston,
all right, yes. Boston, MA. It's 50 degrees and partly cloudy. All right. So what I want to do is create a layout that is very similar to this. And instead of creating it from scratch, though, I'm just going to just paste some markup in there this time around. So here's the HTML. And I'm going to go to Visual Studio to paste my HTML, just because I want to show you that just because you're in Blend doesn't mean you have to do everything in Blend. And you can actually switch between whichever editor you are more comfortable with. So I'm going to paste the HTML here, result of the container. And I'm basically just adding a heading one tag for temperature. Ideally, you don't want to have three heading one tags. It's probably not the best design. You want to probably section it out. But that's a minor demo thing that I should have fixed earlier. But pretend that these are actually not heading ones. But the end result is you're going to see something that's very similar. And I'm adding an image called same image you saw before. And if I just go back into Blend, you will see, yes, navigate to the page. And you'll just see a collection of all the HTML just arbitrarily just showing up. I'm using placeholder values as well, because we don't have live data just yet for what I'm looking for. And let me now add some CSS as well, because you know, HTML is only as interesting as the styles that go along with it. And for this, I'm just going to copy and paste all the content from right here. And CSS, I'm opening a default version from the shared location. I'm just pasting it in. And you know, if you look at this, nothing particularly interesting. It's just a lot of stuff for specifying grid and row size columns, and then the font size, and then just some other values that you know just make your application look somewhat presentable. And of course, yes, reload, yes to all. And now, let me save my file. And now if I were to refresh the page again and now navigate to that page, you'll now see, why is it not showing up? Let's figure that out. I have a results container. I have defaulted CSS. Oh, sorry, it is results content. See, that is a, if I now were to magically rename this to results content, you'll now see the styles appearing. All right, there you go. That was, that could have been potentially embarrassing, but it was only mildly embarrassing. All right, so now you have my content. It all shows up, and that's fine. So now the really fun part is you saw all the, we just saw so far CSS, adding some shared content in the form of HTML. Now let's talk about the JavaScript, because right now we're using this fake data. Let's use some live data instead. So reload document. Let's go to default.js. So I'm just going to uncomment some code that I added just a few seconds ago. And what this function says is when the results page is loaded, call an API called getWeatherData, and then just set up some event handlers where when I click on the search button, I go back to the home page. So nothing particularly interesting right there. But really, getWeatherData is where the really exciting stuff is going to happen. So I'm going to copy getWeatherData, and I'm going to paste it in. And so what this function does is pretty simple. I'm calling an API. There's a free API from World Weather Online, which is what I'm relying on for all the functionality you're seeing right here. And I'm just constructing a query. You know, it's basically the base URL, plus the query is whatever text I type in, like Cancun or Boston or Atlanta. And then I'm just, this is from their documentation, basically. And then I pass an API key, which I showed you just a few moments earlier. And all I'm doing at this point is just, using the WinJS, library to just make a small, XML HTTP request call. And I'm just saying, call this API, search for, get some data, and it does its own processing. And what gets returned is a collection of JSON objects. And I'm just parsing that out into my own variable called weather data, which is an array of objects. And you can see the three important parts are really current weather, cloudy condition, and weather summary, which I am storing from the data that gets returned. And I'm doing some minor processing. For example, here's the degree character, which you can see barely, that I just want to throw in as part of the data as it gets returned. And just for kicks, I'm going to go ahead and set a breakpoint here, and let's see what exactly is going on. Because I have my phone. Oh, the phone app is the default one, so we'll let it load right here. And let me just type in Redmond, Washington, and hit go. And once I've done that, notice that the breakpoint gets hit. And the breakpoint of debugging functionality in VS, I think, is really, really cool. And it works across both phone and store. So depending on which project you have set up your startup, that is the one that the breakpoints will get hit on. And you can do all the stuff that you would expect with a normal debugger. In this case, you can actually hover over the items. I want to see weather data, inspect it to make sure the values are correct. You can see right here, it's cloudy condition is 75, current weather is 59, and the weather summary is partly cloudy. So great. So I have my data, and it works. And I can do other debugging things. I can call the immediate window. I can call set commands. I can inspect variables. I can do all of that, but I will get to some of that later depending on how much time we have available. Let me go and exit a debugger. The interesting part, though, that I do want to call out is what I'm doing with the data here is not just storing it for later processing. I'm immediately taking it and saying, I'm calling the WinJS binding object. I'm calling process all on it and saying, at the root of my document, I want you to set weather data as the data context. This is basically a way, if you've done data binding in XAML before, it's very similar in HTML as well. You just have to specify data context, and then any items under it can be bound to using a very similar syntax that you'd use for binding anything in kind of an array-based scenario. All right, I have my data, setting it to the root of my document. Null specifies root. And now let's go ahead and bind it to some actual functionality. I'm going to hit refresh. And notice that because we rely on JavaScript, I would refresh all the time to make sure that the JavaScript in the state of my application is actually kept running properly. So let's do zip code just to make things a little interesting. And I'm going to exit out of this mode. And now I'm going to select the 70, which is where the temperature is currently being set. And text content 70. And what I'm going to do is go to hit the little properties marker that is, it's a classic of, the blend historical, UI that we've been using forever. And you just say edit data binding. And when I do that, notice that now you can see the three fields that you saw in our code earlier, current weather, cloudy condition, weather summary. And I'm just going to say, this is the temperature one. So I'm just going to say current weather and hit OK. And once I've done that, notice you now see 59 appearing. And then for the summary, I'm going to go ahead and select current cloudy condition. And once I've done that, you will see, weather summary. You will see partly cloudy appearing. And because we're dealing with live data, you now see the exact same version of your app as you would if you were to actually run it. So if I were to go back here and then I'll type in Atlanta, Georgia again, you'll see inside the design surface, the exact application now shows up with all the functionality you would see had you actually run it in the application itself. There are some minor tweaks, though, that I would like to do. For example, right now our app looks fine in the store. Let's just make sure that things look fine on the phone as well. And let's do Boston. And all right, this is pretty cool. So right now our app, it's mostly functional. It looks, it looks and behaves as we would want it to. There's some minor tweaks, though, I could always make. For example, notice that the text being white means that it's not quite visible. And these are things that you can spend some time on as part of, your fit and finish part of building your application. So for example, one way I can actually adjust the visibility of this content is to give it a slight drop shadow. And I haven't really talked about classes a whole lot, so I figured I'll just go ahead and combine both of these into this particular, scenario. So ID elements are unique. You apply them to one element. But if I want to apply a style across many elements, one way I could do that is by giving it a class value and just applying it to multiple elements. So I'm going to right click on temperature. I'm going to say add new class. And I'm going to call this one, let's call this one shadow, just to remove all ambiguity and what's going to happen. And I'm going to go to my CSS properties panel, and shadow is selected, which means any change I'm going to be making will live in the shadow star rule. And I'm going to set a text shadow property. Text shadow. And let's go ahead and give it a slight dark gray color, offset of 2. Let's give it a blur of 5. Not 50, 5. And I give it an alpha of 50%. And notice that now, once I've done that, you can now see a subtle shadow behind the temperature, which makes it very clear, it makes it a little easier to read. And I'm going to repeat this for the summary text as well. But instead of repeating the whole process, we already have a star rule created called dot shadow. I'm just going to right-click on it and say, add existing class, shadow, and now all the content. Now I can quickly repeat that as well for my text. And you'll now see that there's a subtle shadow that now makes it easier to read all the content that you see here. So pretty cool, and all of that works. So what I'm going to do last thing is, if you saw from my slides, we actually have time as well. You can actually show time values depending. You can change the background and all that depending on what time is currently going on. I'm just going to make it very, very quick because you've already seen a lot of the functionality for both data binding and making media query changes. So I'm just going to go ahead and uncomment get time and paste the entire set of code for the getTime function. And what this function does is pretty simple. It makes another call to the API, exact same query, exact same API key that I pass in, and it just returns a value that gives you the local time based on the location you actually provided. And I have a function that basically just takes the time, and then adds some classes to the body element to let my CSS know what exactly is going on. And you will see that in a second. So let me paste of that functionality in. And let's go to default.css and just replace the body content I've added here. So notice what I'm doing here. I have my body, nothing has changed here. I have portrait and landscape orientation. What I am doing, though, is relying on some classes that are being added to my body element for dusk, night, and day. And depending on that, I'm loading a different image, and I'm repeating the slight variation of that for portrait and landscape as well. And the way that works is, if I have a set of ranges that I'm basically checking the time for, And depending on what time range you're falling in, I am actually adding or removing the appropriate class value as needed. So the only trick with this approach is to figure out a time or figure out a place where the time actually is indeed, you know, a different value than bright, sunny daytime. So where is it nighttime right now? Does anyone know?
Honolulu,
all right. Honolulu. Why? Did I do this? All right, there you go. Now you can see nighttime being displayed. And you know, the last thing that is really cool, though, is that you know, because it's all live data, I can select my markup, I can go to my body element, and notice that on the body element, you have a class called night. And that value is not defined by your markup, it's defined by the JavaScript. So the live version of the code that you're seeing running at all times doesn't extend to what you see here. It extends to every part of the tool that you might be interacting with it. So for example, you can see the CSS properties panel. You can see body.night being specified here. And then if I were to just take a quick look at what values are being set, you can see that the night background is being set as well. So I think that's a, you know, it's a great way to design your application across both of these states. And likewise, like I mentioned before, I'm not going to show it here, but all the stuff that you did right now will work on the store project as well, because, you know, as you saw, almost, I'm going to say probably 98% of everything we've done so far is actually shareable. You know, you have default CSS, which is shared across both your store and phone, all the images shared, and of course, our homepage and resulted HTML, which are really just, you know, really simple markup, but again, those are completely shared as well. Like, there's nothing really platform specific in what I've done so far. The only areas where you might need to do something that is kind of unique really goes into the packaging and deployment side of things. So we spent a lot of time building the application. The last few things I want to do is talk about, you know, the content that you have to specify as part of having it appear in the App Store, as part of showing up in the start screen and things like that. And to simplify things, one of the things we've improved with this release as part of supporting universal apps is our manifest designer. You know, this is the area where, as part of every Windows Store application, both phone and desktop, you have a file with an extension .apex manifest that defines a lot of the functionality for what is my default start page or what is the default orientation my application is going to launch in. And what I'm going to show you right now is, you know, what is my splash screen going to look like? And I just double-clicked on the file, and you can see the several categories of things that you can specify. And it's actually unique to the platform you're currently targeting. So I currently opened the Windows 8.1 version of it, which is why you're seeing settings for minimum width, for example, which might not apply to the phone. So I'm just going to go ahead and go to the visual assets category. And I'm going to go to splash screen. And all I want to do is specify a splash screen here. Let me go to, let me figure out where it is again. Original. Manifest and splash screen. And it just tells me that a file already exists, but that's okay. I will override it. And once I've done that, let me just hit F5 and show the splash screen. The one thing that Blend does not show you is the splash screen, so that's a big bummer in my opinion. I'm kidding. So splash screen is up, hit F5. You will now see the Windows Store version of it showing up. The splash screen kind of, you know, you saw very briefly, there was a slight gray background to it. Let's go and fix that. I meant to do that earlier, but I forgot about that. Now let me hit F5 again. And you'll now see that climb slug appears. You can now type in some values, and you know, and the app works. And notice that in this case, I'm actually running it on by hitting F5. And the functionality you're seeing here is identical to what we saw in Blend. And the resolution I'm running it right now, just in case you're wondering why things look a little bit different, is that if you remember, in Blend, I was telling you a little bit earlier about the device panel, which is really where you can specify some of your device settings based on the application you're running on. By default, we set you at 1366 by 768. My laptop is actually running at 1920 by 1080. So if I were to just switch you over into 1920 by a resolution that is appropriate to that, you will see a version of the app that is identical to what you saw when I hit F5. So, you know, there's multiple ways of saving you some time without having to hit F5 and wait for it to deploy and all of that. And that's more definitely the case with the phone as well. So let me go to the phone. Let me open up the Apex manifest for the phone. And now you can specify some settings that are very phone specific. And again, these are not shared. These are very specific to the device you're targeting. And just like before, I'm going to go to visual assets. Background color, give it the color I specified earlier. And let me go ahead and actually, this is the wrong one, not the I did not mean to specify anything there. And now it's complaining. Was it transparent? Yep. I'm going to specify background color for a splash screen here. And now I'm going to just load the page that I had before, a different version of it at least, for scale. Great. And I have my phone to start a project, and I'm going to hit play, and just make sure that this looks fine as well. And yep, you see the splash screen appear, and you see the application, and everything works fine. So yeah, so there you have it, a very, very simple approach to changing the assets for an application that goes across both store and phone, and has a lot of shared content, in fact, mostly shared content. So now, though, what is interesting is, what I just showed you is a version of the application where you're seeing the app, and it is created from scratch. Now, many of you, though, probably have applications you built before you announced universal app support. You probably have a Windows Store app you want to make into Windows Phone, or maybe even vice versa. So what I'm going to show you, though, is how to basically do that, and I'm going to basically use an application that I demoed many years ago. So if you ever watched any of my previous build talks or tech ed talks, you might see a very familiar app being shown. Let me first just clean out all my projects and start from a blank slate. Let me close my solution. And I'm going to open a project that I called PicaFlick. Actually, that is the... That is the wrong version. Let me go to original, PicaFlick final, yep. And what this app does, which once I get it open, you'll see, is it allows you to build an application that goes to the web, fetches some movie data, and displays some content. Has anyone seen this app before, by the way? All right, good. Okay, it's brand new. Oh, sorry. For whatever reason, PowerPoint tends to put me into extended mode. All right, great. So I have my app, and it's basically an application where it gives you all the latest movies that are currently playing. You know, I'm basically just goes through the Rotten Tomatoes API, gets some data, and you can see some items appearing. And as you can see right now, it is very much a Windows Store only app. It's just Windows 8.1. There's no concept of sharing, anything like that. So what I'm going to show you, we're running a little bit out of time, so I'm going to try to cut some corners where I can. I will let you know where I am cutting corners. But what I'm going to do first is have a project. I'm going to right-click on it. And when you right-click on a non-universal app, one of the changes we made is you have the ability now to add a Windows Phone 8.1 head. In this case, because the Windows Store project, it says add Windows Phone 8.1. You can imagine a case where I have a Windows Phone-only project going. It'll just say add Windows 8.1. So it's context-sensitive based on the project you currently have. So I'm going to say add Windows Phone 8.1. And when it does that, you'll get a dialog that tells you, hey, we're going to convert this into a universal project. And what this means is that you're going to have a Windows 8.1 project and a shared project as well to go along with it. So let's go ahead and click OK and let VS do its thing. And once it does that, you're going to end up in a structure that you've been seeing many times already. You have the Windows 8.1 structure, and then you have your Windows Phone. Then you have a shared location, which, because you're working with an existing project, it's hard to guess what content is actually shareable and what isn't. So it's completely blank. It's entirely up to you to define what exactly goes here. So what I'm going to do, so there are many ways you can now decide on how you want to make your application shared. The way I do it is simple. Because everything is a merger, and any content I move into my shared location is merged into, let's say, my Windows 8.1 project, I'm just going to go a little aggressive and just copy my JS file completely and put it into shared, fine. And I'm going to copy my two HTML files and put into shared as well. And this is not because I'm pretty confident that the content is shareable. As you'll see, there's some unique things I need to fix, but it's because it's a good starting point. And CSS as well. I have default CSS, and I have default CSS here. What I want to do, though, is I want to have default CSS be shared, but in this case, because the CSS was written with store only in mind, I don't feel like rewriting my CSS from scratch. Instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a new CSS. In fact, I'm going to rename the phone's CSS file to be phone.css. So what this means is any references in the phone project to default.css will be loaded from the shared location. But I definitely want to have some platform-specific CSS, which I want loaded from a phone-only location, which I will reference in HTML shortly. And obviously, there's no equivalent of that in the Windows Phone area. I'm sorry, in the Windows Store area. And let me just break apart some of the images as well. So add images. So I think these are all very much unique to my project. And yep, let's paste these into the common location as well. So as a sanity check, just to make sure that by doing this, you know, by breaking apart all this functionality, I didn't accidentally break up my Windows project. Let me just hit F5. Now, startup project is still Windows Store. Let me just hit the local, hit F5 to make sure that my Windows Store project still works. And yep, so far so good. So despite me having moved a lot of content around, all the content shared location hasn't quite broken my Windows Store project just yet. So, and hopefully it'll stay that way. Now, let me go back into Blend and start seeing what's going on, you know, from a visual side of things. All right, this here's default HTML. I'm going to set my resolution back to 1366 by 768, just so I can have more real estate to work on. The app looks fine here. Let me just close out all of these files just to make things simpler a bit. And now I'm going to go ahead and open my phone defaulted HTML. And right here, you're going to see some kind of, you know, kind of unique behavior, which is, so content goes here, it's appearing. Clearly, some of the CSS is being inherited. Let me select the body element. And you can see that, yep, body defaulted CSS. I definitely don't want content goes here. And why is it doing that? And does anyone know why my code hasn't fully run yet? OK, well, the reason is, it's very subtle, but one of the reasons is that the JavaScript, I'm currently has, there's a very unique version of the JavaScript file in phone itself, which means that because of how the merger and how the name reconciliation works, that this file is actually what gets launched. And this file is just your boilerplate JS code that you get with any blank project. So if we just go ahead and delete this, let me just go and delete this folder altogether, because again, the reason is that I want default JS from my store project to kick in. And let me refresh the page. And once I've done that, I need to save my project. Now let me refresh the page. You will start to see a version of this project where you can now see the code is loaded. But clearly, though, this is not how I intended for it to look like, because, you know, when I wrote my application, obviously, I created it in a world where the screen sizes, the minimum is 768 by 1366, not quite a 480 by 800 device. So there's some changes I'm going to have to make. And the way I'm going to make them, though, is not like in the previous project where I tried to massage the value so they fit this, you know, very generic, you know, lowest common denominator approach. I'm going to actually have it be very phone specific. And that's because and the way I'm going to do that is I added phone.css earlier. I'm going to make all my changes into phone.css in order to make this happen. So there are several ways you can do this. The easiest way is to go to style rules panel. Right now, by default, our phone project references theme dark and then default.css. I'm just going to tell it to add a reference to phone.css as well. And once I've done that, you'll see in your markup, phone.css has now been referenced. And just based on the order it is being referenced in, any changes I make to phone.css will override what is in default.css as well. So I'm going to have a lot of shared markup, but anything that I want to be just unique for the phone, I can go ahead and make it very easily without having to do a lot of, you know, mental gymnastics to keep track of things. And the last thing I'm going to do is I'm going to right-click on this item and set it as insertion point. You know, it's mainly if you know from your experience maybe using XAML, you can specify an insertion point, and any default content you add goes into that container without, you know, you having to think too much about it. And similar concept applies right here. I'm setting this as an insertion point, which means that any UI gesture I use for adding new style rules will automatically go into phone.css and not into default.css, because that is not what I would want. I don't want phone-specific content to also interfere with what I'm doing on my store project as well. OK, great. So I have phone.css. I have my elements right here. And what I want to do first is just fix what you're currently seeing at this location. So right now, by default, you can see home container has default.css displayed. What I want to do is create a copy of it that now lives in phone.css, because I can make my changes here. So just like before, there's an ID already specified. I'm going to say create star rule from element ID. And because my active container was phone.css, you now see that now has precedent over what's going on there. So I have my home container. I'm going to select the image. And let's go and just repeat a little bit of what you saw before. So film strip, let me repeat this horizontally. And let me add the logo as well. Let's call this one, I think it's called main logo. Position this up. And let's make the size of this to be not that, the opposite of that, contain. And we don't want it to repeat at all. All right, great. So, you know, the chicken's a little large, we'll fix that. But just to make sure that nothing happened, yep, things look just fine on my store version of it. And in my phone-specific version of it as well, things look okay because phone.css is overriding the values you're seeing in the store project. So let me quickly make some changes here. Sprite container, let me create a styrofoam from element class in this case and have it live in phone.css as well so that any changes I'm making here end up affecting only that particular part of my application. So let's go ahead and set the height of this to, you know, I think it is 206 pixels. Or 103 pixels. And let me set the chicken button, the size of this button itself to be to create styrofoam from element ID. And let me set its height to be 103 pixels. And okay, that's a little too small. Hang on, let's fix that. 206 pixels. Well, you know what? I'm not gonna spend, you get the idea. I'm trying to make the image smaller. Something's not causing it to work, but that's okay. We'll figure with it, you know, after the demo. I'll let you guys know what went wrong. But the interesting part though, right? This page is okay. You know, something's weird, but you know, the functionality sort of works. But what gets really interesting though is when I go to the next page. The next page is, imagine I'm able to click on something. Okay, so here, things are really, really messed up. And the reason is that the page was never really designed for the layout that I used was very optimized for a horizontal arrangement, which is great for the store, not so great for the phone. And so what I'm going to do here is just make some changes to make some, you know, modifications to what's going to happen here. And the first thing I'm going to do, though, is if I select the content of this template, notice what you're seeing here. You're seeing some cases where I have a lot of inline styles being set. And one of the things that makes sharing content, especially styles, extremely difficult, if not impossible, is inline styles. So the first thing you should always do when you are in a situation where the content you're trying to make more generic is, you know, is not generic, is refactor some of the content as possible. And I want to very quickly show you how that is done, one way of doing it. You know, you can obviously copy the styles manually and put into a style role yourself. But in Blend, one of the features we've added recently is the ability to just right-click on an element, right-click on inline style, cut it, and since we already have a style role created for you, just paste it in there. The end result is identical to what you had before, but the difference is, though, your markup is now doesn't have any style-specific content inside it, which means that as I want to make it more generic, I'll be very easily, just I can make the changes without having to duplicate my HTML itself, which is definitely a good thing because I prefer keeping my CSS, you know, platform-specific, but my HTML, if at all possible, I want to keep it as platform neutral instead. All right, great. So with this, I have now gotten to a state now where I can make the CSS changes, I can override the styles, as long as it's going into phone.css, and all the stuff I showed you before will just apply easily. So because we're starting to run out of time, I'm not going to go too much further, but you get the basic idea of some of the things you can do to get your application now in a state where this page has a unique styling, and this page has unique styling, and you saw plenty of that in the previous section. So I'm going to start, you know, I want to definitely leave some time for some conclusion and all of that. So let's go ahead and go to the next slide. So what you learned, as a quick wrap-up, hopefully, is how universal projects work. And you also saw a lot of material on how to build shared UI using HTML and CSS. And I introduced you, and I gave you an overview of media queries. You saw a little bit of portrait and landscape. You have a much richer collection of media queries as well, which you should definitely explore if you are really interested in seeing some of this, you know, other functionality you have available. You saw a device panel, which gives you the ability to, among many things, change resolution, change orientation, so you can in real time see how your code is being affected. You saw a little bit of Blend, actually a lot of Blend, and you saw some JavaScript debugging. Profiling we didn't quite get to, but, and I highly encourage you to check out some of the other talks where they do talk about profiling quite a bit, like checking your performance and checking how your UI elements are being drawn, because performance is pretty important, especially on a mobile device, which are not quite as, you know, as powerful as your desktop might be. And then, you know, we spend a lot of time also just looking at visual inconsistencies, like, you know, how do you find them, how do you fix them, and what are some tricks you can do to minimize them. So just three tips. you know, as you know, the universal project structure is a way for you to make sense of your shared and non-shared content. You know, it seems really complicated, but really it's just a merger. You have a shared location where all of your content that you want across both your projects will live, and as part of build time, as part of deployment, the contents just get merged together with the name collisions where the platform-specific file will always end up winning. And this is something that saved me plenty of time over the years, over the past few months while I've been working on universal projects, is I opened default HTML from both the phone and the store at the same time. And he saw me switching between them all the time just to make sure that a change I'm making doesn't inadvertently break functionality in the store or vice versa, because it's very easy to do that. You know, you're just adding a few lines of markup, and if you put one in the wrong location, you now have something that looks kind of weird in one of the platforms. And the last thing is, what you're building are single-page applications. So, you know, default HTML is still platform-specific, but everything else, all the homepage HTML, the results content, and the movie container, all the files that I've shown before afterwards, though, have all been done in a very, very platform-neutral way. So you can, you know, my general guidance is that, if at all possible, share all of your JavaScript. You know, there's no point in having code and logic being unique to the platform. Share as much of your CSS and HTML as you can, but fully understandable that given how different the form factors are and how people's expectations, how they use the platforms are, you might have different HTML on your phone and on your Windows Store, which is fine. Because the goal really is to not try to pigeonhole everything into a shared model, but to just make your life easier. And so really just do whatever makes your life easy. I think CSS and HTML can be shared, and JavaScript definitely should be shared. And with that, you know, before we wrap up, you know, all the artwork you've seen so far were done by Lina Yeo and Billy Chow. And also, you know, the AV person who helped make all this stuff work was Bryce sitting in the back. So let's give them like a ridiculously loud applause. I'll give them a recording of it afterwards. So 1, 2, and 3. All right. Yeah, I'll play a recording for them at full volume when I get back to work on Monday. All right, so with that, you know, let me know if you have any questions. And one of the things we like to do always is actually enlist a lot of you guys' help in defining the future of our product. So, you know, if you have any questions, email me. But if you also want to help with our future planning, if you want to help out with our surveys, focus groups, or give feedback on prototypes and mock-ups of, you know, the next features we're working on, send me an email as well. You know, I'd love to, you know, touch base with you and get some of your feedback on changes you're making in the future. So, all right, guys, you know, I'll still be around for questions, and you know, we have 7 minutes for questions as well, so if any questions, feel free to walk up to a microphone and just ask. So. All right, I'll see you guys. I'll also be working at the booth, you know, throughout the week, so if any questions afterwards, just drop by as well.